From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 471, Just Enough Admin and Windows Server 2016 with guest Jeffrey Snover. Recorded Tuesday, April 16th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I have one of my favorite guests in the world back on the show. It's Jeffrey Snover, and he's a technical fellow and the lead architect for the Enterprise Cloud Group. Snover is the inventor of the Windows PowerShell, an object-based distributed automation engine, scripting language, and command line shell, and has made the world a much better place. Thank you for coming back, sir.
Hey, how you doing? I'm glad to be here.
And it was fun to see you at Build amongst a group of highly influential Microsoft people. I was in one of the RD meetings, which are all very hush-hush and private, and got into some great conversations around the bash prompt coming to Windows 10. Like, what a crazy Build event that was.
Wasn't it? It was a great Build, I have to say. I have to say, each Build seems to be getting better and better.
Yeah, you're setting a bar awfully high.
I know. And that bash thing, boy, did that take the world by storm.
Oh, yeah, people are just bug-eyed. It's already installed on one of my secondary laptops so I can experiment with it. Because, you know, I've got some Linux chops back in the day, and it's nice to see it there.
Yeah, it's cool.
And I think this was a conversation you and I actually had at Build, where it's like, this is not an administrator's tool. This is for facilitating developers to work more efficiently for now.
That's exactly correct. A lot of people are like, what's this mean? And, oh, does this mean PowerShell's dead? And, it's like, what? No, wait. Let's be clear. And we're super clear when we talked about it, just some people didn't hear it. And that is, this is all about developers. You know, a lot of developers are developing for Windows. That's great. And then a bunch of developers are developing for Linux servers. And for those people, they would love to do their development on Windows 10, but it's not a particularly conducive environment to write that open source software. Mm-hmm. You have to either run a VM, and that's what a lot of them do, and that works out fine. But what this does is it allows you bash on Windows,
right?
And it's not a VM. It starts up like in a heartbeat, and then you have a bubble of Linux, and then you can run, you develop your applications in that bubble, try them out, and then deploy them to your open source servers.
Yeah, I think it's very compelling from the point of view of trying to reduce that cycle time of write some code, build some code, run some code, test some code, find out what went wrong, get back and go again. The faster we can get around that, the better off we are.
You've got it exactly correct. And it directly aligns with Satya's vision of Microsoft is the company that helps people do more.
Right.
Developers, whether you're developing for Windows, we're going to make you more productive. Or even if you're developing for Linux, we're going to make you more productive.
Because the IT guy in me, and admittedly, I'm bipolar, right? I switch back and forth between these two modes all the time. As soon as I saw the bash prompt, I thought sudo. Because I loved living in a regular user account and elevating to root to do a couple of commands and then dropping back down again. And it's that you don't have that same workflow in Windows.
Right. Although now we're bringing it to Windows with the Gia stuff. A little bit different workflow, but it's the same concept.
And when you say Gia, I think with a G, but you mean with a J. You mean Just Enough Administration.
Exactly correct. Am I pronouncing it wrong?
No. You know what? Let's make Gia a thing because I'd never seen that before.
Exactly. So Gia is the thing we added in PowerShell version, I guess PowerShell version 4, and then we really invest. No. It was a toolkit, experimental toolkit in PowerShell version 4. We released it in PowerShell version 5. And what it says is we're going to allow people who have regular user privileges to connect to a box, and then we will log them in with administration privileges, with admin privs, to only do a certain set of functions.
Right.
Right. And so the idea there is you'll set up toolkits. Like if you go talk to an enterprise today and say, hey, how many people have admin privs? You will find out that a huge number of them do. And you say, well, why do they? And they're like, well, these contractors need to be able to reboot a server. It's like, well, if that's all they need to do, why did you give them access to everything?
Yeah.
Good heavens, why did you make them domain admins? Stop that. Like, take away all their admin privileges, and then on the machines that they need to manage, go give them the reboot the computer. Go give them the commandlets to update software or manage services, and then those are the only functions that they can do. And when they do those functions, they're doing them as a local admin, but they aren't a local admin. So that's the model.
It's a really interesting idea, but I mean, my biggest problem today with the organizations I work with is that we've locked down domain accounts thoroughly. You know, I recently did a show with Paula Januiscu, who I'm sure you know who she is.
Sure.
We were talking about ransomware. And one of the strategies I've seen organizations do is simply take away update privileges from domain users. Because we have CMS for all the documents, like you never write over an existing document, you always add a new one. And so there's no reason to ever update a file, and ransomware just doesn't do anything if it can't write on existing files.
Huh.
And where the exploit comes in is the administrator accounts. Administrators are humans too, and they're living in an administrator account without any of the stuff locked down, and they make a mistake, and then the exploit rips through the organization.
Yeah,
so just exactly. This mindset of trying to get away from living as an administrator, that you live as a domain user and you only become an administrator when you do an administrator thing.
Exactly. You know, somebody, Anders Vinberg points out that, you know, about 40 years ago, somebody made a decision to invent this thing called admin. And it was probably one of the worst decisions anybody ever made, right? Because the definition then was like, oh, this admin can do everything. And it sort of like deferred the should they, et cetera, just say, well, I'm going to have this one person who's trust and they can do everything. And that has caused a big problem. And now we need to go and undo that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I told you there was somebody in the development space, something along the lines of case sensitivity and code was a terrible prank. I wish I could undo, you know.
But, exactly.
But yeah, how many times have we dealt with an organization where a VP wants an admin account because it feels powerful?
Oh, good heavens.
Yeah. It's horrifying. So, even if, you know, I like your description of Gia in the sense of I have an external or, you know, basically a lesser being inside of the organization that needs this one power. But how do I, even if I don't granularize my privileges, I want to have a super admin account available, but I'm only in it for the few things I need to do. Could I use Gia that way?
Yeah, that's exactly the model. So basically the idea is you'll define these idea of toolkits, and a toolkit is basically a set of functions that you want to be able to give access to someone. Mm-hmm. And then you'll say, well, what are the requirements for this? And so what'll happen is you come in as a normal person, so you'll have an ACL on PowerShell, and it will decide, oh, do I now elevate you and do a run as? And here we can do a run as a managed service account if you need domain privileges. Mm-hmm. Or more frequently, what you'll do is we'll set up a virtual admin account, a transient account with elevated privileges. You'll only be able to perform those actions. And then when you terminate the session, that account goes away.
Right.
And then, of course, it's got a name that helps it map it back to who came in. So as you look through your logs, it's not just some random admin. It's like, you know who it was.
Right. So, I mean, I got to think my first step then would be build an account that basically has all of the privileges. You could do anything, but you still have this login behavior to just get into it, do your thing, and get back out.
Well, actually, what we're finding now is, you know, the question is, how do we get from here to there?
Right.
How do we take this great capability and mainstream it? And I'll tell you, you know, in reality, it's going to take a while as people figure this out. Now, some of it is pretty straightforward. We're working with some customers that say, hey, I have this. By the way, it's very clear that this is not a binary solution.
Right.
This is not a, I'm going to go from having thousands of people with admin privileges down to no one having admin privileges. This is about managing the numbers, right? We want to go from thousands of people down to hundreds, and from hundreds down to tens, and from tens down to single digits, right? So it's a statistical argument. So what you want to do is to say, hey, it turns out that a very large group of people have admin privileges to do a pretty well-defined set of tasks.
Right.
So let's go solve that problem first. What are those contract, you know, these contractors that you bring in to help manage your systems? What are the functions that they wanted, you wanted them to do? And often that's a pretty clear set. So let's go solve that problem. Next is, what are the toolkits that people use? Now, here we have a role to play. We're working with a number of the customers to understand whether it's file management or Active Directory management. And we have a role in defining those toolkits so that customers just say, oh, yeah, that maps to a job function I have. I'll pick that. It's available in the community. And just use it either as is or as a starter kit for their role. But then the other thing is, we have this idea of a break the glass endpoint. A break the glass endpoint is exactly what you mentioned, which is that you come in and you're able to do anything. Now, how does break the glass work? And the answer is, well, it's an emergency situation, right? That's why you have to break the glass. There's some sort of like, whoa, that's not good. So I'm going to be held accountable for my actions here because it's noticed. There's glass all over the floor.
Yeah, you want everything that happens in that account to be logged in detail.
Exactly.
Sure.
And so one of the ways we expect this will work is people will start off with the break the glass endpoint, and then they'll monitor the logs and see what people actually do. And then from the actual usage, then go define the toolkits.
Neat. Yeah. So because every time you do that, you should do sort of a root cause analysis. Why did you need to break the glass? You look at the task and go, this seems like a routine task. Let's peel it out of that scenario.
And I think that's a critical thing. You know, security that's not deployable is not secure.
I agree.
Right? And so you want to set these environments up, and you have this break the glass that, again, is noticeable. It's logged. Everything gets logged. And then you go have a conversation with the person, and it's one or two things. Either, oh, it turned out that we did not give you the tools you needed to succeed, and so we'll go fix that. Or you weren't trained properly. You didn't realize how to do it,
right,
in which case we'll fix that. Or you did something wrong, and we'll fix that too.
Yeah, there's always to do that. I mean, this is, now we're getting down to sort of the essential thing, which is that we have not thought about granularizing our security particularly well. So maybe we got to jump into this sort of, how do I see that this is on GitHub. Like, is that where I should start, is download the bits from GitHub?
No. So actually what had started is I did this as an experimental toolkit in GitHub and then through the PowerShell gallery. And then we've turned it into a PowerShell feature.
Right.
And so now it's part of PowerShell. And then what we'll do is, you'll see more and more we're doing a number of our projects in GitHub and community sourced. So that's probably where we will go start to define some toolkits and put them there.
So, I mean, the reality is this is in Windows now.
Yes, so, in Windows, in the latest version of Windows, and as part of the Windows Management Framework, which is available down level. So you can take this code and bring it down to, you know, Windows Server 2008, R2, and everything in between.
Right. So obviously it'll be part of Server 2016. But we're recording this in April for publication in May, so that's before we're going to have 2016 still in TP, I think, TP4, TP5,
yep,
something like that. But the Windows Management Framework 5.0, I think it's now, the current version is production preview.
I don't think so. I think we have an RTM on that.
It's actually done.
Yep.
Hooray. I mean, it's always a battle to – we've had a lot of versions of 5 along the way.
Yes.
And we've been able to try and try and try. There it is. There's our real version as of February 2016.
Yes. Well, you know, the point there was we made a conscious shift in strategy after four to be much more community focused.
Sure.
And so we release it frequently and we get community feedback and then we respond. And, you know, it's been, you know, we've had some rough spots along the way as everybody, you know, gets the expectations and the model in focus. But it turned out to be very successful as, boy, this is, you know, you had a problem, you told us about the problem, and we responded to the problem.
Yeah, it's a much deeper level of engagement doing it this way. I know that talking to some of the dev teams, same sort of experience, doing everything very publicly on GitHub, you know, you're going to get feedback whether you want it or not kind of thing. But at the end, I think you get a better product. One of the challenges, like when you search for Windows Management Framework 5.0, you get four or five versions.
Yes.
You know, that's just sort of reality, but you can go get the RTM edition now. And this has the latest version of PowerShell, GS right there, DSC, the integrated scripting environment. Like these are all the bits and they work from 2008 R2 up.
Yep. And it's worth acknowledging that, you know, as we go to this more agile model, it's not for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. And it is not an extension of the old model just done more frequently. So concretely, you know, we had a number of people who said, hey, you know, I just picked up the monthly bits and, you know, there's not full documentation for this. And the answer is, yep, that's right. You know, we'll have some blogs and we'll have some emails, et cetera. But no, it's not, you know, you don't do full documentation at each step along the way. So obviously we could have done a better job with the documentation, but that's sort of not the model. You want to, you know, if you're in the early adopters program, guess what? It's an early adopters experience.
Right. And yeah, if you were going to wait for full documentation, you only get to ship a version every year or so.
Exactly. But, you know, Gia is just one of the amazing things we're doing in Windows Server 2016. I have to tell you, this is the release I'm by far the most excited about. You know, my joke was that, you know, I didn't come to Microsoft because I loved Windows. I came to Microsoft because I wanted to turn Windows into something I did love. And in particular, that, you know, I don't think it had what I thought it needed to be just the operating system that it really could be. And Windows Server 2016 really is that release. And in particular, you know, the operating system in the past, you know, we provided a great operating system, provided a great set of APIs, but then sort of let a thousand blossoms bloom.
Right.
About the relationship between developers and the operations staff. And in reality, that set up a whole bunch of conflict between the organizations, et cetera, that was really, at the end of the day, needless. So with Windows Server 2016, we are resolving the interface between developers and operations. So what does that mean? So in reality, I don't know if you knew this, but prior to Windows Server 2016, we never had a server SDK.
Right.
As strange as that sounds, we never had a server SDK. We just said, well, there's a Windows SDK, and if you're writing server applications, you probably don't want to use the the voice APIs or the shell APIs. So now we have a proper SDK, and as part of that, we're being clear about how to package stuff. Right, so we're using Windows Server applications. That's an extension of AppX, but now refined for servers. We're telling people how to not just package their software, but how to distribute it through mm-hmm. repositories and to do package management with updates and such. We're being clear about how people should configure things using desired state configuration.
Yep.
Talking about how to test things and the importance of testing things, not just your code, but also this operational validation test using something we call Pester, and then how to secure things operationally using things like Gia. Now, this Pester thing, recently someone did a tweet, a blog and then a tweet, and I said, hey, if you do one thing today, stop and read this post, because it really kind of got it in focus. And what he had done was he wrote a set of Pester tests that validated the operations of his Active Directory environment.
Nice.
So he made sure he had connectivity, made sure that the timing was good, made sure certain accounts were there, etc. And here's the point. You know, imagine you're an admin and you go and make some change. You know, you update something or you modify something. When do you get to go home? And the answer is, who knows?
Yeah.
Right? You hang out by the phone for a few hours, and if it doesn't ring, what the heck?
Close enough.
Close enough. Well, no, that's a horrible world.
Yeah.
And so what you want to do is you want to engineer confidence into the system. And that's what PESTR and these operational validation tests do.
Yeah.
So you make a change and then you run these operational validation tests and says, oh, here are all the components and they're running and they're performant and these accounts are there. And so it tells you, you know, and at the end of the day, you made a change and you run a couple thousand tests. And if they all pass, chances are things are pretty good. And if they all fail, chances are you probably shouldn't go home.
It also gives an option for when something, you do go home, something breaks 2 hours later, you build a test to validate that particular failure and you add it to the suite so it never happens again.
Ah, exactly. So this is continuous improvement.
Yes.
It was interesting. I was talking to someone, we were talking earlier about the DevOps revolution. And I was pointing out that really the DevOps revolution is taking some of the things that we did, you know, the Japanese quality revolution in the 1980s, which is all manufacturing focused. And we're taking a lot of those principles and we're now applying them to IT.
I totally agree. Jeff, you got to give me 1 sec to pay the bills here because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Chef, the automation platform for the DevOps workflow. You can use Chef to automate and manage it all, infrastructure, runtime environments, and applications. Chef works in the cloud or in your data center on physical servers, virtual machines, and containers. Get started today with Chef at chef.io/runasradio. So this is the big DevOps story around this whole, this version, this crazy version of Windows Server you're building, which I almost feel like you guys might be biting up more than you could chew. That this is like the Snover edition of Windows.
Well, we don't like to personalize things, but indeed, you know, this is the version that I am so excited about because indeed, I think this is, it finally puts in place the architecture to resolve this interface. And so that now developers know what they need to do to empower their IT pros, their operators, so that they can move fast. Because it's all back to exactly what you said. What excites me the most is that as an industry, we're finally getting good at transforming IT to drive the business forward. Now, how does that work? And the answer is we're a group of us are getting good at listening to our customers, figuring out what's really needed, mm-hmm. being able to deliver that, you know, change applications, deliver features, and then deploy them, and then listen and do it again, and to do that loop very, very quickly. And if you can do that loop faster than your competitors, you can gain a sustainable advantage and win the day. And so it's all about fast cycles. Now, how do you have fast cycles? And again, it's back to the quality revolution of, you know, Japanese manufacturing. Mm-hmm. That is, you have repeatable processes, you have well-defined expectations, you meet those expectations, and then you measure and you improve. So exactly what you said. Oh, I made some change. Did it work or didn't it? I don't know. Oh, okay, well, let's solve that problem. Let's define this. Oh, I do a set of tests. I made a change. Those tests run. I'm happy. Good. Oh, I made a set of changes. I run the test. They all say I'm happy. But something bad happened. Somebody called me. Great. Fix the problem and then fix your test so that never happens again. So that's what we're doing is we're putting together the infrastructure, making it clear to developers, hey, developers, you need to deliver these things in these ways so your operations staff can take what you've done, the great value that you've done, and actually deploy it in a way that drives the business forward. Because if you've done great work as a developer, but you hand it to your IT staff and it falls on the floor, I mean, you might sit there in your office saying, oh, I'm a great developer and I got crap operations staff and doesn't it suck that we have to, that the business died because of my crappy operators? But that's not the right model. The right model is you're working together as a team. You have your expertise, they have their expertise, and the system is engineered so that you can work together. You know, I think we were talking about this, you know, in the DevOps world, we talk about a lot about, hey, this is about people and processes and culture, and right. It's not about technology. And that's true. That's the higher order bit. But the reality is, it's about technology too.
Yes.
Technology makes things easy or it makes things hard. And with Windows Server 2016, we're creating what Rico Mariotti used to call the pit of success. You know, you just keep falling into this pit of success because it's just so easy to do the right way. Oh, when I do things this way, when I package stuff up, when I put it in repositories, when I have tests, when I do desired state configuration, geez, it seems like no matter what I do, I succeed. Why? It
didn't That's so strange. That
yeah. It's as though there were an architecture to it.
It almost like it had a plan. It's very strange. We're not just firefighting all the time. A couple of weeks back, I talked to Steve Murawski and Michael Green, who's a cat guy over at Microsoft, about this idea of a release pipeline for your infrastructure. So following that same sort of continuous deployment, continuous improvement mindset that the developers are using, but doing it for your configuration stuff, for PowerShell scripts and DSC. It was exciting to think in the terms of these tools. This is now the fastest way to respond to a disaster. Cause, you know, we talk about the break the glass scenario, which is like, give me unbridled power. I want to change anything. You know, it's also super dangerous. Like, it's unrepeatable. How many times have I been in a firefight technologically with a system and made a deeper hole rather than pull us out of it?
Yep, that's so exactly correct.
I just wonder if we can, what it's going to take to get to a place where we get so good with these tools that this is the fast way to fix things, that we can, you know, you even said it yourself, fix the problem, then write the test. Like, could I write the test to prove there's a problem and then fix the problem? Could I be quick enough to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what you'd like to do. But in reality, there's always that unforeseen thing. The key is there's that joke, don't let any crisis go on it. Don't waste a good crisis. When you do have a problem, use that problem to get better.
Yes.
By the way, that works not just for technology, but for teams too. Whenever you have a conflict, we do this at work. We adopted this as a team norm, and it really transformed a bunch of our working relationships. And you know, just we have a very high performing team. And the model we had was, when you encounter a problem, work the problem and then work the system. Which is to say, okay, go resolve that problem, but then go resolve what happened. Like, why did this happen? You know, is it, are you not showing up the right way you should? Are you not asking the right questions? Did you somehow feel intimidated and didn't feel like you could ask something or didn't feel like you could confront someone? Let's go work, you know, commit ourselves to solve the particular problem, but then understand the root causes and address those. So some of the guys in the failure analysis world call this the five whys.
Right. Yeah, this is right back to that Japanese manufacturing mindset.
Exactly. Which, by the way, came from a bunch of American engineers over, because the Americans wouldn't listen to them, so they went over to Japan.
But Douglas MacArthur listened to him, and since he was now emperor of Japan, he dragged them all. This is Deming and all those guys.
Yeah, exactly, Deming, yep.
So the other piece that I think you were just stepping around this, like we talk about empowering people, it's the Andon cord. Right. It's the ability for everybody on the team to be able to stop the process when they see something wrong.
Right.
And it's interesting to think about how that would manifest in infrastructure, like what that actually looks like. I guess it's the break the glass. Isn't the break the glass? You go to that just enough administration client that has all powerful. You're effectively pulling the Andon card.
I hadn't thought about that one.
I'm stopping the manufacturing line of all of our routine things. I'm doing a non-routine thing. Treat it like the assembly line has stopped. Something serious has happened, and we have to find out why.
Yeah. Although in the service context, it's hard to stop the machine, and that's what, or, you know, the service.
Yes.
And so that's why they have these A/B testing. So what you'll do is you'll say, hey, and I'm sure Michael talked about this in his paper, mm-hmm. what you want to do is you take this change and you put it into an environment where indeed you can stop the, you know, if it doesn't work, just stop it right there while continuing to deliver the overall service.
Right.
And so you put it in an environment, vet it out, make sure it's running, and then So in other words, it's not binary. It's linear. Instead of saying I used to be on version one and now I'm on version two, you say I'm on version one. 100% of my stuff's on version one, and now 10% is on version two. Now 30% is on version two, up to 100%.
Well, this is the awesomeness of the cloud, right? Is that I don't have to take anything. I could always build another assembly line, pretty much on demand.
You know, you got it exactly, because people say, well, everything you're talking about, okay, fine, but I could always do that. Is there something different? And the answer is twofold. One is, yeah, you could, and we let 1,000 blossoms bloom.
Sure,
and some people did and were very successful. But they were not. We did not create this pit of success where everybody was successful. And so we're doing that. And the second is that the cloud really does transform things. Mm-hmm. The cloud really does allow us this agility that we did not have before. And that enables us to go fast and be flexible and to perform some of these operations, which theoretically you could do, but in reality, they were pretty hard to do without the semantics of the cloud.
This is where the tooling makes a difference. And I want to grab one point as we're running low on time at this point. You talked about this as a cultural element. And I think one of the things you were essentially saying in that root cause analysis is, how do I get my culture to a place where failure is acceptable? You know, I can't tell you how many organizations I've dealt with where the fear of failure and the consequence of failure have been so steep that we'd rather spend months analyzing rather than take a chance of failing.
Yeah, no, it is a challenge. And honestly, it's one of the challenges that we've had in the Windows environment, mm-hmm. right? In the Windows environment, because it was so successful. In fact, you go back to IE. You know, a lot of people threw rocks at IE saying, oh, well, you know, you got to the point where, you know, you were very successful and then you stopped investing. And, oh, that's because of all sorts of evil stuff.
Right.
I'll tell you, before I came to Microsoft, I subscribed to all these evil conspiracy theories. And then when I came to Microsoft, I realized, oh, none of that's the case at all. It's a group of people whose heads and hearts are in the right place, but they confront some really hard problems. So let's talk about the IE problem. At some point, it really was the number one browser by far. Like, everybody was doing everything on IE.
For sure.
And every time that team made a change, they broke a huge number of people. So, okay, so it's better, sort of, except then you broke a group of people. And they came to this conclusion that said, boy, you know, right now there's so many people using us, and every time we change it, we break a bunch of people. Are we doing the right thing for our customers to continue to do this?
Right.
So instead of what they should have done is to say, hey, let's adopt some Japanese quality manufacturing principles so that I can apply changes and assure that I have success. Instead, they sort of said, hey, let's stop changing things. That's one of the reactions to risk is you say, oh, I'm successful. Now I don't want to screw up. So I don't change anything. Don't change anything. Don't change anything.
Right. You fall into the innovator's dilemma.
And I guarantee that's the way you fail,
sure.
is by being afraid to change things.
Yeah.
Instead, what you have to do is you have to create an environment where it's okay to change things, where it's okay to have small failures. Big failures, you don't want to have big failures. But you want to create an environment where you can have a failure and it's not a devastating failure, and then go fast. You know, that's what a lot of this release management is about, not having one release with 10,000 changes in it. And if something goes wrong, the question is, well, what went wrong? And the answer is, who knows? It's one of these 10,000.
Yeah, I don't know. Plus, it took us a year to get all those changes done. So it's like, we can't wait another year for another round of changes.
Exactly. Instead, you have 10,000 really small changes. And if anything ever goes wrong, it was the last thing I just did.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Do this faster and more often. So it's just not that big of a deal anymore. The cloud, as a guy who does a lot of scaling websites, like, look, I don't update servers anymore. I live in the cloud. I run a script that builds a whole new set of servers, and then I redirect the traffic to the new ones bit by bit till I have confidence. And then I kill the old ones, right? They're all cattle.
Exactly. Now, you heard this thing, and we talk about, you know, pets versus cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was pointing out that with containers, they're not even cattle. They're more like chickens. Because with chickens, you don't even number the chickens.
No.
You know, you number your cattle, but you don't even number your chickens. You just say, yeah, I got a lot of them.
And, yeah, they're in little boxes.
Exactly.
I don't really want to talk too much about the life of a chicken because it's pretty awful.
Is it? Okay.
Well, you know, more than I do. Over on the other show on the .NET Rock side, I just did a series. We do one geeky show a month on whatever subject you want. And I did the whole modern agriculture thing. We ended up in a conversation about just how short-lived, you know, the 10 weeks that a chicken's alive. It's not a bad analogy for the point of view of a container that they are super short. You grow them to what you need them to be, and then they're done. As fast as possible. It's just
that's like a container.
Yep, it's very a container is very quick. That much lighter, that much faster. And it gets back to this: the power of rapid iteration is that you have to automate. Like you're forcing yourself down a path of reliability and consistency. Right, that pit of success you've been looking for.
And so now you can understand why a guy who had invented PowerShell is now sort of the chief architect over the server.
It totally makes sense.
It's no longer about a guy and the server with the keyboard and a mouse and a screen. It's about how do I automate this massive amount of things and how do I make that go fast, fast, fast.
And just to loop it back to what we started out with, what's brilliant about just enough administration is as you build each one of those pieces, being able to apply the security privilege to that piece. No more, no less.
So that
nobody ever needs the super user count. The glass never needs to be broken again.
Right. And that's back to that pit of success. Mm-hmm. I don't get into trouble because I'm not an admin. And then when I am an admin, I can only do these things. I can't do those other things.
Yeah.
So it's like if something happens to you, it's all contained. It's this pit of success. Nothing goes out of control.
Jeffrey, so much fun to talk to you. We could just keep going, but suddenly a half hour has disappeared and then some.
All right.
So on the road for you, we're going to see you at every conference going forward. I'm sure you'll be a highlight at Ignite.
Yes, absolutely. It seems like I'm going to be on the road quite a bit. People are very excited about Windows Server 2016. They're very excited about PowerShell. They're crazy excited about Azure Stack.
Yes.
I got to make sure I deliver all those things, and then lots of people want to talk to me about them and find out how they can get them and use them and how to transform their business with them. So I got to say, it's one of the most exciting times I've been in the industry.
Awesome. Jeffrey Stovey, thank you for coming on the show. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.